And now, What's in a Name, starring Dick Hogan.
Here's the boulder, Captain.
We'd better get ready to charge in on them.
Right. Get ready, men, and be careful. Every killer in that camp is armed to the teeth.
From Hollywood, the U.S. Army and the U.S. Air Force bring you a story of pioneer Americana titled What's in a Name, featuring the well-known stage, screen, and radio personality, Mr. Dick Hogan. This transcribed feature is another in the series of The Voice of the Army. Cultural and economic development of the United States, from a vast, forbidding wilderness to a leading nation in the world today, has been due to the heroic efforts of many enterprising individuals. Some of these American pioneers have since become legendary characters, identified by deed as well as by name. Others, their work quickly forgotten through the swift succession of events, have never been recognized. Still others remain relatively unknown. It is with one of these men that our story today is concerned. Patrick Edward Connor, pioneer, Indian peacemaker, soldier. Portrayed on Voice of the Army by Dick Hogan.
I was born on St. Patrick's Day, 1820, near the Lakes of Killarney in County Kerry, Ireland. And a few years later, emigrated to New York City with my parents. In November 1839... I first enlisted in the United States Regular Army as a dragoon, serving for 5 years at Fort Leavenworth, Fort Atkinson, Iowa Territory, Fort Sanford, and in building the second Fort Des Moines. Later, I served a few months as a Texas foot rifleman, rising to the rank of captain in the Texas Volunteers before being honorably discharged a year or so afterward. Then, having followed the scent of gold to California in 1850, I joined up with Captain Harry Love's 20 California Rangers. This was a posse that had been authorized by the state for the express purpose of ridding the country of the notorious bandit Joaquin Murrieta and his followers, including one Three-Fingered Jack, and of bringing to an end the reign of terror caused by their numerous killings and robberies. A price of $5,000 was offered for the head of Murrieta. Early one morning in July, after Murrieta's former wife advised Captain Love of the location of the bandit's hideout, we advanced cautiously toward the outlaw's camp at Arroyo Cantoba, while Murrieta and his followers were still sleeping.
All right, men. You all know what to do now. Murrieta and his gang should be camped at the mouth of that canyon just ahead. We can't afford to try to sneak in much closer or they might hear us. Get ready to rush the camp as soon as we reach that long boulder to the left. That'll put the rising sun behind us. Henderson.
Yes, sir.
You've been wanting to get Murrieta for a long time. Well, this is your chance. Don't let him get away.
He won't get away this time.
Connor?
Yes, sir.
I'm going after Three-Fingered Jack. You cover Henderson and me in case either of us gets into trouble.
I understand, Captain.
Good. The rest of you men take the others in the camp as we arranged.
Here's the boulder, Captain. We'd better get ready to charge in on them.
Right. Now get ready, men, and be careful. Every killer in that camp is armed to the teeth.
There's the camp, just ahead.
All right, men. Shoot everything that moves. Let's go.
There goes Three-Fingered Jack, Captain. He's crawling into the underbrush.
I'll get him, Connor. Go help Henderson. Hurry up and just jump on his horse.
Are you all right, Henderson?
Never better. I just got Murrieta between the eyes.
Three-Fingered Jack won't bother us anymore. Did you get Murrieta?
There he is lying in the sand.
Oh, good work. The rest of our men made out pretty well, too. A couple of the gang escaped, but we got what we came after. Bandits Joaquin Murrieta and Three-Fingered Jack have held up their last stagecoach.
The following year, I married and settled in Stockton, California, where I established the city waterworks in 1858. And 3 years later, I was mustered in as colonel of the 3rd California Infantry at Camp McDougal, with the job of helping to make peace with the Indians along the Overland Mail Route. One of the peace talks I arranged was with Buffalo Jim, an Indian chief next in rank to Winnemucca and the biggest rascal in the tribe.
All right, men, quiet. The colonel wants to speak with Chief Buffalo Jim.
Buffalo Jim?
Huh?
You be good Indian, not kill white man. I protect you and punish white man when he is unjust to you and abuses you.
All right. Just a moment now. That's only half of it.
White man is settling this area so as to make things better both for Indian and for white man. And if Buffalo Jim bothers white man, Buffalo Jim makes trouble for Indian as well as for white man. White man cannot help to make things better for Indian if Buffalo Jim will not let him. Now, if Buffalo Jim is bad Indian, if Buffalo Jim kills immigrants and steals cattle, that is no good. Buffalo Jim must be good Indian so that white man can help all Indians. Understand? What does Buffalo Jim say?
Buffalo Jim, good Indian.
Making peaceful arrangements with the Indians was largely a matter of knowing how to handle them, and judging from the results we gained, I think we knew how to manage them as well as anyone in the territory at that time. On October 22, 1862, a few days after the regiment marched through Salt Lake City, we established a military reservation on a site north of Red Butte Creek. 4 days later, the new army post was formally recognized.
All
right, men. Let's see a decent formation there. The old man will be here in a minute. Private Jones, get that mud off your stirrup and hurry up.
Here comes all the brass, Sergeant.
Troop, attention! Men are assembled as ordered, sir.
Very good, Sergeant. Colonel Connor has a few words to say to them. Sir, the men are ready for your message.
Thank you, Captain. Men, you have just taken part in the organizing of a new United States Army post that may serve your country for generations to come. On the other hand, it may give way within a few months to military and economic expediency, like many army posts before it, and thus soon be forgotten. Nevertheless, it is our duty to maintain it while we're here in a manner befitting the finest traditions and customs of United States Army troops. And having lived, marched, and fought beside you these many months past, I know that you can be depended upon to do so. Major, will you please read this order to the men?
Yes, sir. Orders number 14. Headquarters, District of Utah, Camp number 49 near Salt Lake City, October 26, 1862. Pursuant to orders from Departmental Headquarters, a military post is hereby established at this camp to be called Camp Douglas. Yes, but Colonel Connor, we thought the camp was going to be named for you.
Please continue reading, Major.
Well, yes, sir. The following is declared to constitute the military reserve pertaining to this post, commencing at a post due north, 1 mile distant from the garrison flagstaff, and running thence west, 1 mile, thence east, 2 miles, thence north, 2 miles, and thence west, 1 mile to the place of beginning, containing 2,560 acres, more or less, by order of Patrick Edward Connor, Colonel, 3rd Infantry, California Volunteers, Commanding District. You wish to say anything further, Colonel?
No, that's all, Major.
Yes, sir. Dismiss the men, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Troop dismissed!
Well, sir, this came as quite a shock to the men, you know. We were all expecting to name the post Camp Connor for you, sir.
Yes, sir, we thought that...
Gentlemen, we have named the camp for an American patriot whose name is far more worthy of the honor than my own. The little giant, the late Senator Stephen Arnold Douglas of Illinois. Let's hope that the results of our efforts here will endure as long as his name will be remembered.
Very well, sir, but we had hoped to have you...
That is all, gentlemen. But thank you very much, just the same.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant 7 months later, this desire of the men serving under Patrick Edward Connor, by then a brigadier, and later a brevet major general, was fulfilled. At a location near Soda Springs, Idaho Territory, Camp Connor was established. And then 2 years later, a Fort Connor was erected along the Powder River. But soon afterwards, the name was changed to Fort Reno. It is significant to note that by 1870, in a War Department report on barracks and hospitals with descriptions of military posts prepared by the Surgeon General's office, neither Camp Connor, nor Fort Reno was listed. But Camp Douglas was, and still exists today at Fort Douglas, Utah. Among other things, General Connor was instrumental in establishing the first daily newspaper in Utah, the Daily Vedette, which was first published at Camp Douglas on January 5, 1864. Of Major General Patrick Edward Connor, soldier, pioneer, public servant, the Salt Lake Tribune stated on the day following his death in December 1891, he was a mighty factor in the last 25 years' history of Utah.
Behind the development of these United States, our heritage, lie the names of many volunteer patriots like Major General Patrick Edward Connor. But it has been their deeds rather than their names which, since their time, have helped to mold the very destinies, individually as well as collectively, of every citizen of the United States of America.
Thank you, Mr. Dick Hogan. And now, Mr. Hogan, would you care to say a few words concerning the opportunities in the Army and Air Force today?
Well, I'd just like to remind the enlistable young men in the audience that our country needs volunteers today, just as it did when General Patrick Edward Connor joined up as a private in 1839. I think that the advantages and benefits of service in the U.S. Army or the U.S. Air Force speak for themselves. I don't think they need any gilding or any high-pressure salesmanship. They represent opportunities which few young men of military age can look for in other walks of life today.
Thank you again, Mr. Dick Hogan. And to the interested young men of military age who are listening, may I suggest that you see your local U.S. Army and U.S. Air Force recruiting sergeant at once. He'll be very glad to explain in detail the many opportunities you may realize through enlisting. And he will show you why, since 1946, more than 1.5 million young American volunteer patriots have joined
the United States Army
or the United States Air Force.
Your Army and your Air Force serve the nation and mankind in war and peace.
This program was brought to you by the U.S. Army and the U.S. Air Force in cooperation with this radio station and starred Dick Hogan as Patrick Edward Connor. Also featured in the cast were Byron Kane, Howard McNear, and Bill Martell. Voice of the Army thanks Dick Hogan for his services on this program, which was written by Master Sergeant Robert C.C. McCann and was directed by Major Hugh K. Murray. Dick Hogan is currently appearing in the Paramount film Beyond Glory. This is Rye Billsbury speaking.
This program has been another in the series of
The Voice of the Army.